Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, June 24th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live, if you're listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Look on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up. We finished the Gospel of John last week, so we're going to be moving into another book. We're going to be looking into the epistle, first epistle of John, starting in chapter 1, and it's read by Alexander Scorby. So, first epistle of John, chapter 1, read by Alexander Scorby.
The First Epistle General of John, Chapter 1. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled, of the word of life. For the life was manifested, and we have seen it, and bear witness, and show unto you that eternal life which was with the Father, and was manifested unto us. That which we have seen and heard, declare we unto you, that ye also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father, and with his Son Jesus Christ. And these things write we unto you, that your joy may be full. This then is the message which we have heard of him, and declare unto you, that God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. If we say that we have fellowship with him, and walk in darkness, we lie, and do not the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Jesus Christ his Son cleanseth us from all sin. If we say that we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. If we say that we have not sinned, we make him a liar, and his word is not in us.
Okay, it's quite confusing. You've got a lot of things going on this board since I got to move it around a different way other than using an MP3, but I guess I'll get used to it eventually. Let me close some things down here. Okay, Jen, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements?
Yes, we have two or three tonight, John.
Okay.
The first one is, and this comes up about every second or third week, I read your Meet Your Straw Man book and saw that on page 12 and 13, you have three steps of how to write back to the bank or company that sends you a summons. Are these the same steps I should follow for a summary judgment that came from a rubber stamping judge in my hometown, which is benefiting a third party, a predatory collections agency that is not even licensed as a debt collector in my state? I guess my... Now let's start with that.
Okay. All right, well, same answer I gave before. I didn't write that book. I've written quite a few, and some of these books have been, stolen, because we had them up free, and haven't been able to get a hold of the guy that stole them. And he does have our website in these booklets. As a matter of fact, I understand he's in jail right now. But in any event, whoever wrote that straw man book, that was not me, and I don't know why National Liberty Alliance is put in there. But in any event, we don't teach that kind of stuff. A long time ago, we did look at that stuff, and we did talk about it. And I know I'd done some of those things as far as, you know, writing a paper and filing it with the county, that kind of thing. And never went much deeper than that, and because my research showed that there's a better way to deal with the problem, and that is actually use the law instead of their statutes, because a lot of the statutory things that these people are doing were written by the people they're trying to escape from. So, but in any event, that's not our book. Next question.
Okay, this is kind of a continuation. This case has been ongoing for several months. We recently filed a federal lawsuit to go after the Arapaho County Court, which may conflict out this case, but until the federal case is accepted, I can't really, excuse me, go back to work. And I'm out $50,000. We are going after the lawyer with the bar complaint and so forth, but we have proofs of his malfeasance in facilitating a conspiracy. And I guess he attached a 13-page document to that. It started with a motion for clarification and so on. I don't know if you... I think I addressed a copy of that to you, John, when I sent you that other information a couple days ago, right at the same time. I don't know if you saw it or not.
Well, I don't have time to read, you know, 14 pages. And, you know, half the time I don't even have enough time to do the things I have to do. And I've got a lot of reading, and you know, just trying to get to the reading is tough. So I can't sit and read people's cases to try to figure things out. People need to learn for themselves. That's what we're doing. We're teaching people. We can give advice and thoughts to ideas. They have to understand how due process works, how the court system works, you know, how what common law is all about, and how to use common law and opposed to statutes. And use statutes against these individuals and that kind of stuff. Of course, we did a course on that. It's a 90-hour course. And anybody that gets educated in that area, you know, we might be able to assist them with a little bit of knowledge here, a little bit of knowledge there, but they need some place to store this stuff, and they need some basic understanding in order to give it to them. And I'm not too sure exactly what they're doing. Is there anything there in a nutshell that explains what exactly they're trying to do there, Jan?
Say again, John, I missed that.
Yeah, is there anything in a nutshell in that paper that you just read, you know, that email, what exactly they're trying to do or what kind of information they're looking for?
I didn't read the whole thing. There was like three or four different things in it, and they were like a couple, 3 pages, 4 pages long each, so...
Yeah, it's just too much to deal with on this program. But if they come onto the program and if they have knowledge and they can ask simple questions and we can give some thoughts and ideas maybe. And but they have to have some kind of a framework within their mind to be able to place the information we would give. Otherwise, we'd spend a long time trying to, you know, talk or discuss a case and try to educate someone from... You know, from the low level all the way up, you know, and of course we can't do that. We'd blow out the 2 hours that we have here on Mondays. So, all right, next question.
Okay, this one is a very narrow bent as well. Starts out, does the Fair Debt Collection Practice Act apply to California's Franchise Tax Board, or FTB? I erroneously sent a debt validation letter to the Office of Appeals, and subsequently 3 weeks later, the FTB put a subpoena on my account. I eventually got this hold released, incurring a bank legal fee. I presume FTB is a debt collection agency and FDCPA should apply. Upon release of the bank hold, the FTB sent me paperwork to arrange for installments and to fill out the forms within 15 days of the notice. They did not say business days. I'm planning to do a UCC-1 filing ahead of schedule. Should I resend my debt validation letter to FTB directly and get an address for that?
That sounds a lot like the same thing with the straw man kind of thing, getting into the UCC stuff and, you know, putting letters and making declarations and that kind of thing. That's what it sounds like, no?
Yeah.
You know, with the debt. I mean, it's very dangerous to deal with the debt if you're trying to collect money or pay a bill using their statutory processes that are not really available to the people. Only it's only available to them, and anybody who tries to make these collections and get this money or so on, they're going to find themselves in jail. So,
is there any way he can buy more time?
Buy more time for what now?
Well, you know, he's got a debt or a time here, 15 days without working days or business days.
Okay, and 15 days for him to respond, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With his arrangements to pay this whatever amount of money it was.
Well, you can always ask for more time. They should give time. You can you know, ask for 30 days or something. You just need more time, or you need to get counsel, or whatever the case you want to make work for you. I mean, that'll buy you more time. But again, I'm not sure exactly what he's trying to do or she's trying to do.
Okay.
Do you understand what exactly are they trying to collect money? And were they trying to pay this debt off through some statutory process that they set up?
He apparently made a mistake and sent him a notice, and so they found out he's there and who he is, so they sent him a thing and says, pay this in 15 days or else.
Well, that's not good.
No.
Yeah, I don't know. There's not enough information for me to really speak, and if he's really trying to deal with you know, the system that they set up, you know, he's only going to get himself deeper in trouble.
Yeah. So, it's a California group as well.
So, yeah, can't help on that. So, anything else?
Nope, that was the last one, John. We're all done.
Okay, all right. Last week, I believe we spoke a little bit about, let me see, I put it under Education Starts Here, Law, lost it, Education Law, coming over down to Court Forms and Process. Okay. And this was a paper that was sent to me recently. It's called the Anti-Government Movement Handbook. Now, I had received this before. I'd forgotten that I even had it, and I really haven't had time to read it. And I started reading it, and I still haven't got time to really get through it. I've just really just basically touched the beginning of the book. So there's, I got to find time to sit down and read this book because it looks like it could be very advantageous. And understanding particularly what's going on the lower courts. And when I say the lower courts, I mean the city courts, the village courts, the town courts, all those courts. They're administrative courts, also referred to as nisi prius courts. And some of their strategies that they're starting to use and how they're trying to understand some of the strategies that have been brought up against them that they haven't been able to answer or deal with. And then, of course, they call us anti-government. When the truth of the matter is, they're anti-government, at least the government that we set up. So anyway, that book is available right here, anti-government movement book. You know, it's quite a few pages, about 150 pages. And it's written for judges. And it explains a lot, and it's advantageous to know what they know. So anybody in the courts might want to try to find some time to read this book. Okay, now the other thing we spoke about, let me see how many people are in the queue here right now. Okay, we got a few people in the queue. I don't know whether we want to get into it. I was going to share something with the traffic. We did post it up last week. Up under the traffic area. Let's see where I put it. Let's see, Common Law Trusts, Traffic Court Argument. That's not it, is it? Oh, yeah, here. Yeah. Move to state court, you know, when you challenge the jurisdiction. And I don't think I'm going to read this, at least not right now. I'm going to go into the Q&A and start taking questions so we can spend time there. But if we do run out of people that have questions, then maybe we'll come and read this and look through it. It's only about four pages. I think it's a pretty powerful paper. And really, you know, the challenging of the jurisdiction itself was written up in the traffic court. And so there's a reference on that challenge in this paper, but this paper is really about you know, moving it into the state court, laying out the case to some degree, but laying out the position of the jurisdictional challenge is really laid out in the paperwork that's attached to this paper. And we did read that before, and you can find that under our, under today's issues, come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, and you can run through that over here and find them. I think they were done last month. Yeah, one was done last month, 429. That's a traffic court follow-up. And we had done a traffic court earlier than that. And here it is, the traffic Monday Night Forum 4124, Town Village Traffic and Administrative Courts. And it's all the same. It doesn't matter what the case is inside of a town court, village court, or a city court. Now, you got to be careful because you want to read your constitution because, for instance, here in New York, the courts in New York City are referred to courts of record. So they have the authority and the power to, you know, they're beyond the administrative side of the court, although they work under civil law because all our courts have been hijacked to civil law, which is Babylonian law. Our courts have been taken over for quite some time now. And of course, that's what we're working to take back. You know, we did put up a new page, and we got a website coming up which hasn't launched yet, which is only going to be a couple pages for the sole purpose of collecting affidavits for anyone that wants to attach their papers to our final paper that will be filed at a specific time. We're not ready to file it. As a matter of fact, I've been working on this paper the last few days and over the weekend. And, over the weekend. And I'm just going through a lot of the memorandums right now because we've got about maybe 25, possibly even 30 memorandums that will be attached to this paper, which really gets in and clarifies the details of every position that's made in the paper. You know, it's going to be filed, and we're hoping to file it with maybe literally hundreds of thousands or at least thousands of affidavits. I've connected with a couple of different groups, and we're going to be having some meetings soon. And I've only had one meeting with one individual so far, but they're putting other things together, and they funded that other website that has been put up there. So, you know, we're going to have the word go out concerning this to probably millions of people, definitely well over hundreds of thousands of people, you know, considering all of the different liberty groups that are involved with this one group that is working sort of like what we're doing. I mean, we're National Liberty Alliance. We do try to look for people who have things going on that that work with what we're doing. You know, as long as we're compatible, you know, we don't get into the man on the land stuff. We get into the natural law and call what it is, the fraud. And that's how we deal with it, with common law. We're not going to deal with it with their statutes and different things, the little tidbits that they supposedly given us. Because anybody who does execute those things to get the money out, use things to pay bills off, you know, with your SESQ account and all that stuff, rest assured you'll find yourself in jail quite quickly. So anyway, that's kind of dangerous to deal with those things. But anyway, what we're doing, people might want to go up and read it. We did do a Monday night. Let me see. Let me go back here. Let's see, the Monday night the writ quo warranto, restoration of our republic, and we covered a few other things, and also restitution, because restitution is the key. The writ quo warranto was picked up by the military. We spoke about that. Anybody who wasn't here for those meetings, you might want to go back and listen to that Monday night program here, and we read part of the writ quo warranto. We did not read all the way through. It's a long paper. It was read by SG Anand. And he's the one that revealed to us that the military has been using our paper. They used it. They picked up on it in 2015 when we filed it, and we did copy them. We copied JAG. We copied the Navy, the Army, the Marines, the Air Force, and all the major generals that are running those operations. We've also contacted every elected official on the federal level and also the state levels, particularly the courts. But we also notified sheriffs and everything. During that time period, we had fax machines running. We had 10 fax machines running 24/7. And so a lot of that information was faxed out. Some of it, of course, to the key individuals was mailed out. Every judge in the nation has been served with it. And it's just the preparation for the finale. And the finale is really the cease and desist to remove all these people from the government. Particularly, we're focusing on the judicial side of things. We're not focusing in on the, you know, the administrative side or the legislators. We'll let the military handle that. We do know that that's going to happen. And it'll probably deal with most of the judges, too. But there'll still be a lot of judges there that need to go. And I've thought a lot about this over the years, and particularly lately. You know, we've offered them the olive branch. We've offered them grace. We asked them numerous times, and they just meet us with silence. They just don't care. And I don't think they're worthy of mercy, at least not from us. The jury might decide to give them mercy, but I don't think we will. And when I'm talking about not giving them mercy, I'm talking about the situation. In other words, they need to cease and desist from their office. They failed to answer. They were supposed to answer within 7 days. It's been years. But they were given a time period to answer, and they still haven't answered. They still met us with silence. And so, as far as we're concerned, I believe at this point in time, they need to leave the office. Now, we don't need judges to run courts of law. People don't realize that. And that's an important point to understand. And the paperwork that we're writing, which is pretty much almost written, I just got a little more to write into it. And we have a lot of memorandums. I want to review all the memorandums. They're all already pretty much written also. But some of them are old, and I want to go back through them. I'd like to update them, find any errors, make some corrections, you know. You're always doing that when you're working and writing. Maybe making it better, easier, maybe more easy to understand, whatever the case may be. But anyway, all those papers are pretty much written. And again, we want to attach as many affidavits as possible to it. We have pages and pages of evidence that we have put together that just references the evidence. The evidence is all found up on our website underneath federal court cases. And also the evidence has been filed with Sessions and then Barr when he was in office. So it's been filed there too. It was filed in the Northern District of New York. We opened a case for a repository, place to store all of our information. We were very clear that this is not a civil law case. We're using it as a repository. And we know that everything goes up there is there, but it's hidden. If you try to get into the case, you won't be able to get access to it, but it's still there. It's just hidden, and that's another crime. That's all that is. But the Bar Association, nobody can work in the justice courts, or any of our courts, really, per se, if they're going to be attached to the Bar, according to the original 13th Amendment. Which our founding fathers actually addressed to it. It was done in originally passed in by the Congress in 1810. So pretty early on, and the way they wrote up that particular 13th Amendment was pretty clear that they kind of had that intention already in the Constitution. But they had to clarify it because it was missing a few points that were necessary to make it clear, and also to take them to the point to get rid of bar attorneys or anybody that calls themselves an esquire, anybody who's an attorney is an esquire. And you know, they'll try to say that they're not esquires, that it's just, it's just a title, you know, it doesn't really mean anything. No, it means something. There's no place anywhere, and I've looked in every legal dictionary out there, I've looked in other dictionaries, I've looked on the internet, and it's always the same thing. They owe allegiance to the crown. That's what an esquire is. You're going to maintain that particular title, then you're given allegiance to the crown. You've lost your citizenship. And you no longer can hold an office of trust. That's what the 13th Amendment says. And actually, they could be deported. But in any event, the bar has got to go out of our courts because they're the ones that destroyed our courts. They're the ones that moved us to civil war. And the judges, again, we don't need judges. Judges are a necessity in the equity courts. There would be a problem there. But there's a lot of people who have practiced and in those areas, you know, let's say just on the federal level, but also on the state level. We'll talk just about the federal level. I believe there are 57 U.S. codes, and each one of those codes require expertise in order to give proper legal advice to whoever it's addressing, whether it's the Congress, president, or some commercial activity, or whatever the case may be. Those are specialties. And people need to understand and be able, you know, lawyers need to be able to address those issues and work through the equity courts. Equity really focuses in on that which is just. That's what really equity is supposed to mean. And in a sense, because we're a republic, our equity courts must be under American jurisprudence, which brings us right under the common law. So even our equity has to marry to the common law. It has to be in balance with the common law. But our courts of law, the tribunal is the people. You know, first of all, to be brought into a court of law in a criminal sense, okay, the people have to agree to it. The people have to indict. So the permission of the people must be given. Once you get into the court, the tribunal is the king's bench. The king, of course, is God himself. It's Jesus Christ. And the bench, of course, is the jury, the 12 individuals, plus a couple of spare wheels. But, the 12 individuals that's going to make the decision, that's the tribunal. Those are the judges. There's no need for a judge in a court of law. As a matter of fact, it's quite clear in law, a lot of U.S. decisions, quite clear, that summary judgments are not permitted in a court of law. In other words, no judge can make a summary judgment, can't make a decision. You know, they can't bypass a jury. So in a court of law, the people are the ones there. Now, every judge is a magistrate, okay, because that's just the facts. Every judge is a magistrate. And then there are people that are just magistrates. They call them magistrates, that they're giving them some judicial powers or whatever, but that's irrelevant. The point is that they are magistrates. They don't have the power to make decisions anyway, because they're not judges. And there's also various kinds of magistrates. It's not just those people in the judicial process or the judicial system. There are other people that have power and authority that are magistrates. And magistrates are the ones that sit in a court of law. And the purpose of the magistrate really is to document and certify and seal the will of the jury. Okay, they don't get to make decisions. They don't get to make decisions, well, these evidence is not permitted in the court. They throw a lot of evidence out all the time because they want to destroy people's cases. So, you know, they'll throw your evidence out and say, you can't bring that in, whatever the case may be. That's a bar thing. They created that. That's part of the civil law. It's the way Babylonian law works, okay? But that's not part of common law. You got evidence, you bring it in. Let the people decide. There's nothing to really deny on that evidence. If that evidence can be rebutted, then the other side will rebut it. It's that simple. However that might be done, that's it. They can't rebut it, well, that's their problem. But anyway, courts of law, a sheriff can sit in as a magistrate. I don't think I looked around to see if a sheriff is actually a magistrate, but he's a powerful individual. He's the chief law enforcer. He is capable and can sit in in as a magistrate in the sense of putting forth, just acting as a traffic cop, so to speak, to move things along in the court, because that's really their job. A coroner can do it, and any magistrate. So by shutting down the judicial system at every level to get rid of every single judge, which I think is what we have to do, I can't see how any one judge can actually survive this. And if anyone thinks they can and they stay in and they leave the bar and they think they can survive it, they can survive as long as they can until someone brings up charges against them that, hey, you did this to me, you did that to me, you went this way, you went that way, you threw me out here, whatever the case may be. Well, that judge is going to have a problem because he's going to have to pay restitution to the individual he injured. The problem with this is they've injured so many people. It's so great, so big, so large. There's no way. We could take everything from every judge in America. We could take everything they own, and it's still not enough to pay the restitution of the damage of the people that they have committed and done year after year. In their courtrooms, and ignoring. They know the truth. They know we have a constitution, and they ignore it. So, in any event, the papers will be filed at some point in time, but we're just getting them together now. Well, time is running short. It's going to take a while to put all this together, so we're really working hard on this. We're looking for money, and hopefully we'll have enough people coming in with their affidavits, and they'll donate some money, because it's going to be very expensive to move this case along. We're looking at a bare minimum of a ream of paper that's 500 pages. Okay, we might even have to do both sides to make this work. I don't know. Maybe just to reduce the paperwork. But we're looking at about a ream of paper to bring in the papers that we have written and all of the memorandums. And I think it'll be a lot more than a ream, too. So if we do both sides, it'll be probably a ream.
Hey, John, let me ask you. Yes. These people that we're working with, who's going to be handling all of these? If we're going to be reaching hundreds of thousands of people, who's going to be handling all of this paperwork?
Well, that's the big problem. We need money. And if it fails, it's because the people spoke and they're not going to support it, and that's it. There's nothing else we could do about that. But I think the people will support it. If we have 1,000, let's say 1,000, or let's say 100,000 affidavits, okay? Well, we also have a donation tab up there, and we should hope that people are going to give us money. We're also looking at a group that speaks about having the ability to find money for good causes, and I think we have a good cause, of course. And, to really do this right, we probably need about 1.5 million. Because the court, we need definitely a secretary. I need a secretary, and we need an office. And that secretary needs to be a paralegal secretary. And then we need at least 10 to 12 paid individuals at the national level here with National Liberty Alliance. So we have salaries there. We have... If the paperwork works out to be, let's say, a ream, 500 pages, if we print both sides, let's say it's 500 pages. But for every affidavit we have, that's a page. If you have 100,000 affidavits, you've got 100,000 documents. Now, with that, what we may do is really file that electronically in different places, in all federal courts, and maybe send an electronic filing down to the state courts. And the state courts will want to go serve one. We'll find out, for instance, here in New York, the main focus and all of the people who rule, I'm trying to think of their different titles, I just can't think of it, but anyway, they're like the chief justices of the entire state. They control everything. And that's found down in New York City. So we can send this down to New York City, and they can disperse it from there. We'll give orders to the clerk. Now, a lot of these people may not take us serious, but at the time that we're going to be filing it, I think they will take us serious. They're going to take us very serious, because at that point in time will be when things are moving and people are being arrested, because that's the only time we can actually file this paperwork. We can't file it before. So we have to wait until that point. But we have to be ready for everything for that point. We have to start printing out papers and getting it ready for mailing. You know, I have to finish going through it. I'll probably have another couple of weeks of work just reviewing all the paperwork that I put together over the years and all the memorandums and updating them and so on and so forth and then bringing them together and packaging them and then getting ready to start printing. And that's when it's going to start to cost money because, right now, there is nobody getting fat here. There are no groups of lawyers. I mean, the paperwork that we've done, if it was done by lawyers, literally would have been millions and millions and millions of dollars. And we've done it on a shoestring, budget, because, we just get enough to survive. But in any event, it's going to be a lot of paperwork, and there's going to be a lot of mailing, and that's got to be done. And then receiving all this affidavits and dealing with that, it's probably going to be a full-time job, just dealing with that alone. So there's a lot of work to do, but we need money.
For sure. That'll be a job. Remember the amount of work that Jim did and Heather Lee and, I did my share. It takes time. That stuff
that's minuscule into what we're really doing now.
Absolutely. It's like a scratch on the surface. But you're right about the clemency for these judges. I mean, in every stage of their oppressions, we petition them in the most humble terms, and our repeated petitions were answered only by repeated injury. So I'm with you 100%. I mean, we have to take every step with honor, justice, and mercy, but they've exhausted all of the mercy. But here's the thing. I've been meaning to ask you this for some time, but you brought it up tonight because you mentioned this, that in the state constitution in New York, that the courts in the city are courts of record, but you said it yourself that they've been hijacked by Babylonian Judeo civil law. So doesn't that nullify their court of record status, if you will?
Well, let's put it this way. Anybody who's been convicted of any crime anywhere in the United States in any of the courts, it's all been unlawfully done. So in theory, no, let's forget theory, in fact, they all really, every person in jail has could make a case and does have the right to have a retrial on everything.
Amen.
Because
Amen.
They were tried in a foreign courts. They were not tried in a natural law courts.
And like you've said many, many times, even the people who, and there is no biblical foundation for jails, you're supposed to restore the victim and the perpetrator. But as you said many, many times, even the people who justly might deserve to be there, even they need to have their cases redone.
Well, everybody does. But we're going to have a lot, I think, well, there's no thinking about it. There's going to be a lot of military cases. That's for sure. I know Gerard's not here tonight. I know he's brought up a number, maybe others know a number. Anybody know the number or the rough number of how many indictments were done that's sitting around? I know Sessions worked on it for quite some time. Barr was working on it. Sessions probably is still in the background working on it. I just recently heard something about Sessions. I think it was with Christian Patriot News with that guy. I think he brought some things up, and Sessions still working. Look at, everything that was going on with Sessions and Barr was really just something for people to look at and confuse people. And also, it gave them, a little, the other side thought that they wouldn't work with Trump or whatever the case may be. But nothing could be further from the truth. They've been working on, and I do believe that Sessions still out there working in the background with an army of lawyers, and I do think Barr is still working on it, and I think others are working on it too. I heard there are hundreds of thousands, and I don't remember how many hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, the number I've heard the last time, I cannot be sure, but I sincerely think it was between 250,000 to 400,000, something like that, something crazy like that.
So let's say 200,000. Let's say there's 200,000 indictments, and I think it's not It's not a ridiculous number because this conspiracy goes so big, so far, so deep. And, you know, I was just watching Bette Davis. What's the name of the program he's got going?
The Bette David fella?
Yeah, he's got
Is it infotainment or something like that?
Yeah, Valuetainment. Yeah. I love that guy's name. I mean, that name that he picked. I love that name, Valuetainment. Excellent idea. But in any event, yeah, him. He just was interviewing, I can't think of this guy. He's very popular. He's all over the place. He's an emergency room doctor, been working on UFO stuff for the last 34, 35 years. He's got a lot of insight, connected with a lot of CIA, FBI, a lot of people, the white hats. There's a lot of good white hats involved with this stuff. And also a large group of individuals that actually are involved with a lot of these craft that we see flying really is... alien craft that's really been back engineered, and he makes the claim that about 70 to 80% of what we see as UFOs is really us. Okay, the other 15-20% or whatever is actual, some kind of we don't even know what they are. Okay, whether they're aliens or, you know, all kinds of thoughts or ideas could be there, different dimensions, whatever. Who knows what that is? But in any event, he was just revealing a lot of stuff on what's really going on and all these black op things going on and black op prisons. And there's like 150 of them, I think he said, around the world that have been located. And there may even be more than that. So we're talking about a huge number of people. You know, they've taken over not just the United States at the federal level. They've taken over a good deal, a lot of states already, and they've got influence and individuals in every single state, within our legislators, within our state administrations, within the courts. I mean, everywhere. So the number of people involved is just unbelievable. And so only the military can really deal with a lot of it. Look at if they are government individuals, then I think the military, because it's a matter of war, they're enemies within, and those people need to be tried by the military, because the other thing would be take them too long to go through a normal process. But we're at war. We've been at war. We've actually been at war since 1750. When the king sent the Bar Association, the bar here, to destroy our judicial process. And ever since then, letters of marque just an assault upon our entire institution, political, judicial, educational-wise. We've got, socialist education going on. Maybe there's another word to use for it, but socialism is probably the key. They've removed the Christian education we had and replaced it with socialism. And socialism ultimately, you know, it's anti-God. It's also, if you want to look at it, it's a religion, because they're true believers in insanity. In any event, they want to erase our Christianity. They did a real good job with that, too. They did a real good job destroying America. We're on our last leg. All right, I forget exactly where I was when I was talking, but we're getting together and putting this paperwork together. We're going to need a lot of money for this, and we're hoping that, people will put in their $5 a month or more, and we're hoping that people who can afford more to put in more. But it's going to cost a lot of money, and again, if we don't get the money to do what we have to do, then the people's folk. They're not interested in saving this nation. That's the only thing I could think of, because I've got everything I own into this thing, you know. I've got income coming in. It goes into NLA to keep things going, and I do get some profits out of it. It's my intellectual work, you know, writing the books and everything. So at the end of the money, I take some money out if there's anything there, and usually it's something, pay bills. But I'm not getting rich over this. Nobody is. But we do need to go professional. And once we get this site up and running, hopefully that's the thing that's going to kick it in. Because we're going to get the word out. We've gone on numerous podcasts. A lot of these people, I met with one individual just for a short time, of course, you know, over the phone. And they got a podcast going. They got quite a large following, and they also have the connections to all the major players that we want to have connections to. So as long as all that pans out and we get going with that, there's lots of other groups and lots of other podcasts and different radio programs and everything. They're going to be doing a lot of interviews. So I think we're going to finally hit that critical mass. And we have to be ready here at National Liberty Alliance to receive that critical mass if that happens. Right now, we need to get together about $3,000 to upgrade our website, which I think is too much for what needs to be done, but I'm trying to negotiate it down maybe to half of that. And I really don't think we should be paying anything, because I believe it's their fault that we are in the condition that we're in with our website. Because I think, Terry, what are we, a number 7 or something with the program that we're using? And I think they're up to 10 or something. Do you know what it is, where we're at?
Yeah, we're on Drupal 7, and Drupal 10 is out, and we've got security updates that haven't been.
Right, and at the end of the year, that's a failed thing for us, because we're not going to get any support at all, and that becomes another major problem. But anyway, we have to upgrade. One of the problems they claim, you know, I'm not even sure what the problems are anymore, because we corrected all the problems. We gave them $1,000, and we spent time working out all the problems. Now it was a matter of updating, and the only concern they had was, will our courses work with the update? And the only thing they have to do is really rebuild everything up, which they just really can take the site, put it up on another server, and then update everything there and see what breaks, if anything breaks. And then if anything breaks, then we'll have to deal with it, you know. But I don't see why anything would break, because all of the courses, I believe, one of them I believe Carl wrote, did he? Or maybe he pulled in a foreign course in a process, but most of the courses that we've built really was built with the Drupal apps or whatever you want to call them. But anyway, we have to figure that out too, because if we don't update our site, I think we fall into a position where we can kind of crash, too many people coming on board. I did speak with them about that when the day of critical mass would come. They've been monitoring it, they claim. So if anything comes real quick, they said things will click in very quickly and broadband will be expanded and all the necessary things. But then, when that happens, it's going to be more money every month, because the greater the broadband, the more money it costs for maintaining a website. So there's a lot of things that just cost money, and we need money. And we need it badly. But, you know, I trust that God's going to work out whatever he's going to work out. I'm doing my share on my side. Everybody should be doing their share, whatever it is they can do. And for some people, it's money. And if we do fail, I'll say it again for the third time tonight, if we do fail, it's because people spoke. It's that simple. They weren't interested enough to save the nation. Now, you know, look, there are things going. We're not the only game in town, okay? But when it comes to the judicial side of things, we are the only game in town. I don't know anybody. They're all bar-struck. You know, we're anti-bar, they're bar-struck. And all the good people out there that are trying to do good things in the court, they're all bar. And bar has got to go, because the 13th Amendment requires it. Just like the Constitution requires gold and silver to be the only form of money. That's it. Everything else has got to go. I mean, people can barter, people can, trade, and you could do your bitcoins, whatever you want. I don't know. People think bitcoins is good, but I see it as the same. It's monopoly. It's backed by nothing. It's backed by absolutely nothing. So I think people are making a big mistake with bitcoin. I see it as really a pyramid. Because all the people that came in the beginning, they're the ones that made the big money, and the inflation of the value has gone so great And yet, what's backing it? What's backing it? And I'll tell you what, if we did get an EMP, a huge one, maybe from the sun or whatever the case may be, that really fried the earth, even though a lot of things are protected, at least here in the United States, our electrical grid is protected. I know my home is protected. But, you know, it's still, I don't know where the internet sits. You know, that's a whole different ball game. Have they protected? I spoke with my server about this, you know, the guy who runs the server, I mean, and they didn't seem interested. They didn't seem to think it was a problem. I don't think they understand what I was talking about. It's not protected. I don't believe that the web is protected. And if the web gets wiped out, where's all your Bitcoin money? That doesn't exist no more. The chain or whatever they call it, it's not there anymore. It's gone.
Yeah, one of Donald Trump's associates or friends, he's of Hispanic heritage. He's a very successful businessman. He said, if you knew who was behind Bitcoin, you'd sprint to get away from it. And as soon as everyone finds out, it'll drop to zero. Not even an EMP, but he said, when you find out who is behind it. And I think what he's saying is it's the government the whole time. It's been the government the whole time.
I always thought that that was probably the case, the enemy behind it. The New World Order, the banksters, the government, somebody. Yeah, somebody. But look, I've looked at money. Money is something, you know, when I read in the Constitution, gold and silver, and I heard about all kinds of different ways that people tried, in history, tried to work out a money system. Even in the colonies, they had problems trying to work out a money system. That's why founding fathers finally came, hey, it can only be gold and silver because everything else fails. It does not matter. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that have been used in the past couple of thousand years by many different places for money, and they all fail except gold and silver. And who set that up is God. You know, I mean, it's in the Bible. Gold and silver, that's the valuable stuff. But in any event, Bitcoins is nothing more than, in my opinion, monopoly money, no different than the Federal Reserve. That's my take on it anyway. Okay, so once that site goes up, I spoke with the site guy that's building this, and I asked him, you know, when's it going to be up? He says it shouldn't take any more than a day or two, and he said 10 or 15 days at most. And I said, well, hopefully a lot less than that. I understand you have to fit it within your scheduling because you've got other things going on. He said, oh, yeah, because I understand how that works. And I think they realize I understand that too. So, but anyway, it could be 10 or 15 days, hopefully a lot quicker. But the moment that happens, we're going to send out an email, a blast, let everybody know. People can start piling in with their affidavits if they've been injured in any way by the government. And again, it doesn't necessarily have to be just in the court itself. I mean, you know, if you've been injured by the government in another fashion and never had the opportunity to get into the court, then, of course, you can do an affidavit and file it with us. And we do really want to get lots of affidavits. So, but right now, people can kind of look at, matter of fact, you can start sending affidavits right now if you, you know, people through NLA or anybody listening in here, because if you go to, I put this in a couple places. Let me see where I put it. I put it under today's issue, stuck in an abusive court. That's one way to get to it. You can click on that. On the right-hand side of a website, there's also a link here, and you can click on that. That'll get you to the same page. So people should be reading through it. excuse me. Natural law requires that for every injury, there must be a remedy. If you've been injured by the courts, we, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, will restore you. Okay, examples of injuries, mortgage foreclosures, tax foreclosures, denial of due process, unlawful imprisonment, denial of habeas corpus, denial of your right to travel, hijacked into family court, hijacked into probate court, denial of any other unalienable right. Okay. You know, you can file an affidavit with us, and this is what we're using as evidence against the judiciary, and we need to remove all judges, and other lawyers who leave the bar could become judges, but they need to understand the common law. But they don't come into law courts. They come into law courts if they become a judge. They're a magistrate, so they come into law courts as a magistrate, who can make no decisions outside the will of the jury itself. And so all they have to go. I also thought about prosecutors. I think prosecutors got to go because they're just all just plain evil. I mean, they just are the evilest bunch. Well, I don't know which is the evilest bunch. They're up there with one of the evilest bunch. So I think prosecutors got to go. We do need prosecutors, of course, and people who are lawyers that leave the bar can come in and be prosecutors. But we're no longer bar controlled. We're not under civil law. We're not under Babylonian law. We're under common law. They can come to us and get an education. We've got a course for them to learn. Or they can find their education somewhere else if they think they can find it. But we'll be very watchful during that time period as the court system evolves. And again, that's going to require that we have the ability to be watchful. And again, that brings us back to we need to be professional. We have to have people working to do this job. Once we get into that part, though, there's different ways to get money from the government itself because they got to support certain things. For instance, we're building administrators for the grand jury. And the trial jury. So we're going to take that away from them, take it away from the bar, okay? And we're going to give it, to the people themselves, and that'll be professional. We know where the money comes from to fund that. We'll be taking that money on a county basis. I'm not going to get too many details on that. I am putting together a handbook on that for individuals involved in that on how that works, but the bottom line is we have to take the court system back. We have to get rid of the bar, kick the bar out of the courts, and we have to open up the courts of justice. We have to define the courts of justice, and that's one of the things this paper is going to do, and that's what I'm working on right now is the defining of the court, what a court of justice actually is, because people don't know what that is. We have to go to history to get it. And we've been working at this for 15 years now, approximately, and we know what a court of law looks like or should look like. And it's going to be a big transition, and the courts of equity are going to hurt for a while, maybe, I don't know. But maybe that's a good thing, too. I don't know.
It can't be bad. Need to move things around, restructure everything. Prosecutors can go with the judges. They can all become resident aliens in accord to the original 13th Amendment, and they'll not be able to practice law anywhere. Now
We're going to forbid any bar attorney from entering into the courts of justice. That includes equity courts. They're forbidden because the law requires that they be forbidden.
Absolutely. And any structure that they have anywhere, we should, and I'm only half serious, but quite serious, we should burn it to the ground, and then we should salt the ground where it stood to spiritually cleanse it, because they are of their father, who's the father of lies. But yeah, they can go that way to resident alien and that'll be the best that they'll be able to do. But remember, they do have the common law. They can take the common law remedy. I don't remember what the name of the principle is, but we've heard Brent speak of it many times. And that is, you can make a public declaration. You have to make it public. You can say, hey, I ran with this group. I now see that they were unlawful. I'm stating out in the public, say in a newspaper. I'm making it public. I'm stating that I was wrong. I ran with the wrong group, and I no longer want to be associated with them. That is a common law remedy. I think we should give this to them, those who want to take it.
Well, that's already been offered to the courts, so they no longer have that availability. But any lawyer that's a bar attorney has that opportunity. They can just leave the bar, learn common law, and they already understand the due process part of it. without the interference of the bar. You know, there's a lot of stuff that the bar, you know, let's put it this way, just don't apply no statutes to it, and you don't have no interference. And but those three people are done. As far as the judges, I don't see any way to get away from it.
Their conscience is seared. Their collective conscience is seared. We've seen this over and over again. You always reach a point of cross purpose with these bar trained attorneys. There's always some hurdle they cannot get across because they cannot understand the common law. They just can't do it. I've never seen it, not one time. So we must have this caveat as well.
Well, that's because their mind has been destroyed in their education to begin with. They were primed before they went to college, and then they went to law school, going through college, and then they got really demoralized there. And the big problem is they make too much money. It's big money, and they've got an addiction to money, and it's pretty serious. So yeah, they're stuck. But again, that's their problem. It's not ours. But the prosecutors have got to go. They can go practice. They can leave the bar and go practice law if they want, as long as they learn the common law. And of course, the judges have got to go. And again, restitution has to be made. There's not enough money from those individuals to make restitution, but there is plenty of money. Trillions of dollars, not millions, not billions, not trillions, but quadrillions. The trillions would be the third, qua would be the fourth, if I'm correct in my thinking here. So
yeah, you are. And you're right. They don't have enough to restore their victims. That's just not possible. By the way, I just checked. There are seven people in the queue, so we might want to get to that.
Okay. All right, we'll move over to the queue. Anyway, we got a lot of work to do coming up. We can use a lot of people, volunteers that might want to help work with us on the national level doing different things. We just need help. We also need money. Okay, let's take our first person in the queue. Maybe next week we'll read that paper. Is this the paper here? Yeah, this paper here. It's four pages. Maybe next week we'll read it if we have time. We'll see what happens. Okay, first person in the queue, it looks like Van. Let's see if that worked. Van, maybe I didn't hit it. Let me try one more time. Okay, Van, yeah, you've been unmuted, Van.
Yes, what
state you're from?
You hear me okay?
We can hear you. What's your state?
All right, Texas, Burnett County, Committee of Safety. Going well. We just got our charter and resolution signed. I just purchased a book and had it delivered on this last Monday. We're scheduling our meeting with the sheriff as of next week. I'm just trying to get the group together, the committee together to vote on it. And I do believe it's just going to be the main group of us that's going to visit with him and give him the book.
Okay, and don't forget to get your paperwork together with that book. You know who
yes,
you are.
I printed off both letters: the letter from the sheriff and your letter.
Okay, but also your resolution, and you want to definitely give them a copy of that.
I'll do the signed copy of that along with the sealed copy.
Okay. All right. I'm going to be updating. I was reading through that the other day, let me just open it up for where it's at so people can see it's in the starter committee of safety down to handbooks and stuff. And the charter, I was reading through this. I want to make a few changes in this. I'll be notifying everybody, sending it out, and I suggest that people make those changes. Again, this is just structural. It's nothing really deep. There's a lot to be added to this as time goes on, and even in the beginning by the committees of safety. But structurally, we all should look the same, and I think we've done a good job on putting this together structurally that works, and it doesn't, ride over people. People need to make the decision on the grassroots level. It's up to them in every county. But that's one of them, the charter, and the other thing is the resolution. Now, this is where I found a few problems in here, particularly in the resolution. So I'm going to go through this, I'll make the changes, and I will update the paper, and then I'll do a red letter paper which shows the changes I made, so that people who have already done this, will be easy for them to go back and just update their papers. And resolutions and even your charter, especially in the beginning, you're going to find yourself updating it quite often, and eventually that'll kind of slow down. But from time to time, you'll find that you'll be updating it, and you'll be updating resolutions too. But I'm glad to see you here, Van. Everybody that's got a committee of safety going should be coming to these Monday night meetings, and if they're not coming, they should be at least watching the videos that we put up every Monday or downloading the audios. But they should be, you know, connected in with us so that we all learn together. And there's a lot of things to be learned on a national level as much as a lot of things to be learned on the grassroots level, which, of course, is different for every county. So they work out their problems. But do you have any questions?
I was just saying problems with my Zooms. Whenever I had Zoom meetings to get attendance in those Zooms, even though I've got 25, 30 people signed up on the list, you know, I'm lucky to get 8 or 9 people show up on a Zoom.
Well, so. Zoom is good. Zoom is good,
it's great because I can share like you're doing.
I'm
able to show documents and to show things and to present. And for me,
Skype is good too. But Zoom is good, and any other thing. When you have your meetings throughout the month, it'd be okay to have your meetings through that. If you have subcommittees working on something, then you might want to meet and discuss it, make a plan, and put it together. Instead of having to leave your home to go out to the meeting, you could do it by Zoom. But as far as your monthly meetings, I think it's extremely important that we bypass the electronic, the web and stuff, and actually physically come together and meet, get to know your neighbors, get some conversations going, have a real meeting, and have it organized well. It's a lot easier for someone to take over your program if you're on the internet than it would be if you're actually in meeting physically face-to-face. As a matter of fact, we do share with anybody who starts a committee of safety, we share the names, first name, county, and phone number of everyone in the state. So you can look at the counties and you can contact the people in your county or the contact counties next door to you close by, invite them to the meeting, try to encourage them to get committees of safety together and start learn to work with these other committees of safety county to county. But each county is unique in its own way, very, very unique. I know it is here in New York. And so we all have our own problems, our own situations, our own focuses. But then there's the state problems, and we need to connect with other committees of safety throughout our state to deal with that. And then there's the federal problems. We need to deal with the committees of safety across the nation. And that's why it's important to come to these national meetings. They may become more involved in a different way as time goes on. Right now, we're focused in on the law, and we're always focused in on education. Education is the key to this whole thing. As Jefferson said, if you expect to be, if you don't expect to be free, if you're ignorant of the law. Again, we have to connect. But anyway, do you have a question or a comment or anything else to add, Ben?
Only one other question would be getting a list of names of members. Yep. As I tried to get a hold of Anthony.
Send an email to Jan, J-A-N, at nationalliance.org. Let them know what you're doing. Make sure your phone number's in there. And give them, your county and your state, your committee of safety, and you're looking for the list of people in the state.
Yeah, you're only going to get that updated so that I know how many joined.
Yeah.
And how many signed up and what's going on, and plus new members within my county and adjacent counties.
And we only give phone numbers. We do not give emails. We really look at this. Don't try to communicate or build a committee of safety with emails. You think you're doing something. It looks like you got a lot of people coming, and then when you call for the force to make a move and you go out, nobody's there.
Got it.
Yeah,
the one with the texting, it's a pain in the butt, but man, you text every single one of them and emails, but the texting seems to be the way to go.
Yeah, you could do some texting, but look, you really got to get in talk. It's a face-to-face thing or in this case, phone to phone thing. You physically talk and get some information going, and then get to a meeting, and then get people to the meeting once a month. You know, when I used to go to meetings once a month, physically speaking to different groups that I had and other people had, and I used to go to these meetings, you know, it was a nice evening out. You get to, you know, communicate and meet up with other people, then you get to discuss the problems and make some ideas and solutions and do whatever it is you got to do, invite the sheriff down, talk with the sheriff. I mean, all kinds of things. I mean, this has to be done mano to mano. We got to get there down on the grassroots, you know, flesh to flesh. Phone numbers, you know, again, is the beginning of communication to bring someone out to the meetings. And then, you know, you'll collect emails anyway to send out basic information, maybe once a month to people, little things, or maybe an educational tidbit, you know, here's a good thing to take a look at, a good video to watch because it teaches about this or that, you know, because if we're not educating ourselves in the law, you know, our heritage is in the law. So you have to know the law to know your heritage. And your inheritance is liberty. And you need to know your liberties. You need to really understand who we are as a people. You need to understand who the king of our court is. You need to understand that we're a republic, have nothing to do with a democracy. Just because we elect, you know, representatives by popular vote, that by no means makes us a democracy. A democracy is where 51% of the people control the other 49. That's a democracy. That's where the Democrats have had, that's why they like this democracy, this Democrats, because they like this democracy, because they've taken control. Even though I don't believe they've got the popular vote, you know, they cheat all the time, so it just looks like they got the popular vote. But the bottom line is they're the ones that have been destroying us constantly, you know, destroying or trying to change our Bill of Rights, to take away a lot of our liberties, change the laws, do all kinds of craziness. But we need to understand what the law is. We need to, and you know, common law, here's the simplest terms I could put it in. Common law is simply common sense. It gets no more difficult than that. Following the heart. Everybody knows right from wrong. God wrote the law in the hearts of all men. We know murder's wrong. We know stealing's wrong. We know when wrongdoing happened. That's why we uniquely qualified to judge the other individuals. First of all, because we don't do that normally, but we just occasionally we're called in to make a judgment, and you sit as a jurist, okay? And you take it seriously because you need to be orientated properly. You need to be informed, fully informed on your job, your powers, your authority, and who you are as the people. And so all of that has to come together, and we do those things. And if we're not doing those things, then we're not controlling it. Because right now, we're not controlling it. Because the juries don't even have the control. Judges overrule juries. I've heard cases and seen cases where judges just threw the jury out and said, start another case. You know, this idea, you know, that is, what do they call it, a stuck jury? What's the word that they use? A hung jury. You know, this hung jury, no such thing as a hung jury. No such thing as a hung jury in common law. If the jury can't figure it out, and they come out to the and say to the, and it wouldn't be a judge either. It would be really, you know, the person administrating the process, the magistrate. And the magistrate would say, well, go sit in there until you figure it out, because until then, you're staying in that room. Because that's the way it works. And if you just come to the point that you just can't, you know, get together on this thing, then you got to liberate the person. That's it. They're not guilty, and that's it. And, you know, it's real evil, in my opinion, when they sequester a jury, okay? Why are they doing that? It's irrelevant. Maybe there are people that didn't want to vote innocent or didn't want to vote guilty or whatever. It's none of their business, okay? It's the what they came to agree with on the jury is their business, and anything that went on in that room, any voting and any decisions, is totally irrelevant and is no business of nobody else but them and God. That's it. And, but, you know, the bars have, the bar attorneys have changed everything. They're the minions of the New World Order. They've changed everything. They've turned everything upside down. Right. Anyway, we need to move on, I guess. All right. Thanks, Ben. We'll take our next caller. Thank you. Okay, 720 area code. Looks like Colorado. What's your first name in Colorado? Rich? Is that what you said, Rich?
Hello, John?
Yeah, go ahead. What's your first name?
Yes, my first name is William. I am in New Mexico, actually. The phone number is from Colorado, but we are in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Okay, well, go right ahead.
Yeah, first I want to thank you for all the work that you're doing and trying to make our courts sane again, because right now it's a racket.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be brief. I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. 3 years ago in July, I was served papers by someone who just walked into my yard. I walked out to see what they wanted, and they handed me a stack of papers and walked off. I said, "What's this?" They didn't say a word. They just left. And then I started reading it, and it was a summons from a company called Patton Aldin Felix, a collection agency. I did some research very quickly and found out that they actually have a lot of class action lawsuits against them for the way they do things. Well, I thought it was a scam at first because nothing was signed. It looked like it was just printed off the internet, and there was nothing stamped. So I just didn't do anything with it. But about 2 weeks later, I got a letter in the mail in August, a summons to appear in court. All right, so I responded because I found out as I did my research that I was served at the end of July, but they had filed the papers in court in February. And so what they do is they file in court, and they don't serve you until 3 or 4 months later. And then by the time you respond, it's too late. So you've automatically lost. And that's what the lawsuits against Patton Aldin Felix were for in other states. So I did go to court, and I told the judge that I was improperly served, that this case needed to be dismissed. Well, the judge, it seemed to me I was supposed to show up on the phone, but I showed up in court in person. And the judge seemed to be a bit disturbed that I was there in person. He appears to be friends with this attorney for over 30 years, as he had said. And they just have this little racket where they just automatically fine for the plaintiff, and you have to pay. Well, I stood my ground. I stood my ground. I stated all the statutes. And I told him that this was a violation of due process, and I insisted on it. Well, the hearing was supposed to go for 5 minutes. It went for over an hour. So finally, the judge asked for a continuance, and he wanted the server to show up in court. Well, 6 months later, we're back in court, and the server didn't show up, and the attorney also didn't show up for the second time. Well, the server's last name is Bukowski, and the man that came to my yard was a middle-aged white European male, and the person who was on the phone who claimed to be Mr. Bukowski was an elderly Mexican, Hispanic man. So I said to the judge, I said, this is highly irregular. You insisted that the server had to be in court. He's not in court. He has to be here physically. You said this is a violation of due process. The judge says, well, I'm just going to allow it today. And everything that had to do with law and the court, the judge just dismissed it. He only wanted to find for the plaintiff and have me pay and be done with this. Well, in the meantime, before I went to court, I did some more research, and I found out that Patton Aldin Felix is not an attorney firm. They are, in fact, a collections agency, and by New Mexico law, they must be licensed in the state of New Mexico to do collections work. Well, they're not. And so I found out that also as an attorney, the attorney has, if he's doing only collections work, he also has to be licensed as a collections agent, and he's not. So I filed an affidavit of truth showing that they are actually committing a fourth-degree felony by not being licensed to do collections in the state of New Mexico, and I filed that with the court. Well, the judge looked at that. He tried to dismiss it, but he couldn't because I insisted it was true. I said, Your Honor, do you know what misprision is? He said he didn't know what that term meant, and I said it means that if you know that someone is in the commission of a felony and you don't report it to the proper authorities, you yourself are in the commission of a felony. I am here to tell the court that this man, this attorney, and the firm that he works for are committing a felony. And so the judge was very agitated, and he called in, three bailiffs came walking in the door, and I saw them coming toward me, and I said, okay, for the record, I have nothing but respect for the courts of New Mexico, for the laws of New Mexico, and for the judges of New Mexico. And when I said that, the bailiffs stopped, stood where they were, and I went back to telling the judge that what he was doing was not fair, that it was not just, that he was acting unlawfully. And the judge just dismissed what I said, found for the plaintiff, told the attorney that he had 30 days to file with the court, and just ended the hearing and left the room. Now, that was August of last year. About 2 weeks ago, I get a letter in the mail from a different attorney from Patton and Felix, a different attorney that I dealt with in the courtroom, so supposedly from the same firm, but saying that the judge did sign a judgment against me, that I have to pay this. Now, my question is, how do I proceed? Now, my first thing I want to do is go ahead and do the same affidavit of truth against this new attorney, because there must be a reason why the old attorney won't send me the papers anymore. So I'm going to file against the new attorney and say he's in the commission of a felony. And again, Patton Allen Felix is in the commission of a felony. But I want to know how I should proceed. And I'll look at your answer.
It's not a new case being opened. It's still the case. It's just ongoing, correct?
It's an ongoing case, yes.
Okay. You should have done this a long time ago, but it's still not too late. Do a countersuit. Call yourself the plaintiff in fact and them the defendants in fact. Lay out every part of the case that you've already laid out with all the necessary proof, you know, statutes, documentations, whatever it is that you need. Another position you want to make on this whole thing, you want to move it into a court of law. You want a jury. Okay, so, you know, you want to open up what's called a court of record. Very simple to do. We, one of the people, you know, I, one of the people of whatever state you're in, you name yourself in this court of record, sues or counter sues. Okay, so do your countersuit. And again, I would change it yourself to the plaintiff in fact and then the defendants in fact. They don't have any agreement with you, any contract. They have no reason to be bothering you. Okay, where is the contract? Where is the agreement? Well, we've got this, we got that. They can't dig up the original agreement because it doesn't exist. It gets lost. There's so much paperwork involved with this and so many things going on, and they're so sloppy, and they have no respect for paperwork anyway. They lose paperwork. They mix papers together. I mean, all kinds of problems. So I wouldn't worry about them being able to find anything. And depending on what it is, they probably can't find anything. If it's a credit card thing, they can't find anything on that. If it's a loan, they can't find anything. Particularly if it's mortgage, can't find anything on that. There is no real contract anyway. There's never been a meeting of the minds. You know, they dictate, and that's it. You don't take the contract the way it is or the agreement the way it is, then you don't get nothing. And so they kind of box us in like they do with everything else. But that's what I would do. Do a countersuit.
I appreciate your advice, John. Yeah, you know, it's a small amount with a store credit card. I could have just paid it. But I don't like being bullied by a bunch of scammers. And I think that this court and this judge, they're a bunch of scammers.
Well, if they want their money, they should come sue you. They shouldn't be selling it off, because what they did is they sold it off to some group, and usually lawyers package this stuff together, they sell it off real cheap, and then they come out looking for the maximum money. They'll deal down a little bit, they look for their profit, and but the whole thing is unlawful anyway, because they have no relationship with you. You have no agreement with you. Who are you? Go away. You see,
that is correct.
The bar system has set this whole thing up. It's a crooked deal. You know, the whole thing is a con job. There is no justice in American courts. Anybody that thinks there is justice in the American courts is naive. They haven't been in the courts. They don't know what's going on. What they're doing to Trump, that's nothing new. What they're doing to Trump right now, anybody paying attention to this, they set everybody up the same way. They do. They ignore the law. They make it up as they go. They'll pick and choose what they want to do, and they'll make it up. They'll go get some trial court decision there's so many trial court decisions that are so bad, so far off, and yet they use that as law. They say there's a precedent set because this case and that case, and so on. And it's similar to this, and therefore it should be ruled that way, and the judges go that way. It's called comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. Maybe it should be called comity, C-O-M, what is it, C-O-M-E-D-Y, right, comity? But in any event, it is comical. But it's comity, and which means that really they're just making their own law up between them. And this is a bar thing. This is the thing that they came up with. It's just more destruction to the courts. And the position that I always lay up when they bring these cases in is a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. That's a common law maxim. It's common sense. Maybe similar, 90% similar. That 10% off changes the whole thing, doesn't it? It's not the same thing. You can't use that. The only thing you can use court decisions with, particularly Supreme Court decisions, is when it comes up to decisions in law that is favorable to the common law. And if it's not favorable to the common law, it's null and void, Marbury versus Madison. So, but anyway, that's what I would do, countersue.
Thank you, John. I appreciate all the work you're doing.
Okay.
God bless you.
You too. Thank you. Okay, we're going to take Dan from South Carolina. You got the mic. Go ahead, Dan.
Greetings, everyone, all over America. The fine job that John DeRash and his partner and all the other partners, which means us in a silent way. I'm Dan Stanlin, and I'm behind John DeRash. I don't know about the rest of you people, and I got some good news that even John, I've been waiting to bring this to John and his partner attention. And for all the many years, how many years has it been, John?
Oh, I don't know, a long time. No.
That would make countless amounts of burning the midnight oil for people like me, people like other people. Yes, this happened to me. And, of course, I'm not going to go any real length because of John DeRash and Jerry Apria and a lot of others, Jan, wonderful people behind National Liberty Alliance, has heard back in, a couple of years back maybe. And, folks, let me sure tell you, people can go and hear this loud and clear that I would have not been able to, back in time, save my home had it not been for John DeRash personally. And then more personally, backing him up, that we're about on the equal footing there, Jerry Apria. You talk about some real Americans, folks. I will promise you, not because what they did for me, but for what they're doing for countless peoples night after night, the most important thing for all college students. And I've had that route in my life and enjoyed my college life, but it should be a prerequisite that on everyone that gets a degree or gets a diploma for any institution of higher learning, they should have the real higher learning and graduate and stay on a situation, leveling the playing field of the corruption this man just spoke to you about just a few minutes ago. Now, I want to say something just a second before I go state to you what I would like to say about the young man. If you listen to what this young man was telling us, the truth of the matter is those people did not give you due process of law right out the gate. And when they don't give you due process law, it's just like John says, you have a right and you have perfect right to carry those people to federal court for violating your due process law. So you really have a strong case there, even though it's for a small amount. There's more to it I could say to what Mr. John, and he would tell you if he had time. And so you need to coordinate yourself with Mr. John at some point or any of his helpers asked to help a young man. But let's move right on with understanding that here's something I saw that you should have done. Within the immediate time that you made a limited appearance, and that's what you should make known to the court, that you would absolutely challenge them jokers. And if they didn't do right, then you have to respond in 30 days to a higher court. That's the way they work. You can even go through a jury trial, or you can go, in my case, North Carolina. I'm from North Carolina, go to Raleigh to the appellate court. Okay, that's enough there. You can learn a lot of these other things. But one other thing I want to mention to everybody is that this young man could tell the judge that it's a crime to conceal a crime, and that you're caught up with someone taking the courts and using it to obtain property under false pretenses, and it's up to your duty. If you do not alert that judge of that stupid court, and which is not really by the backed up by the Constitution, because they are on color of law working, operating to steal what you got, you better learn to get them to understand that you, as a fine citizen of this nation, cannot be anywhere caught up. Because you're a Christian person, hopefully that's the case, or whatever, you cannot be caught up to concealing a crime. And so you're coming there to say, Judge, what is this all about here? And by the way, these papers suggest a crime against who I am, which is a form of identity theft, that you people have got me caught up in this tribunal here today. Okay, that's enough there. Mr. John? I hope you and Mr. Apriya, it's finally come, and this has come in the last 10 days. All of your work, I have been, and one of these situations has been, I've had some people to help me, has come up with an angel investor. You're going to hear what Dan Stanlin has done in Wilmington, North Carolina, and in to Brunswick County over in Bolivia, North Carolina. It's going to become national news. What I have is the power now to absolutely stop all this ridiculous stuff. But let me sure tell you, in these courts, that John has been fighting probably 13 or 14 years. Pay attention to what he's got, because this is part of the precipice, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm not going to divulge this information other than privately before, like tonight. He did not know about this, so I am not going to divulge the exact company that's going to be behind us, hopefully, and behind John Durash, and it's going to supply his needs. Our Heavenly Father is the one that we give credit for. I've been praying about National Liberty Alliance becoming a prominence in every classroom across this America, from high school seniors at least, or juniors to seniors, could learn this. Actually, the kids in middle school could learn this, but as a prerequisite, what Mr. John Durash is teaching us is how to take over our nation, like Donald Trump stands for, and this sounds like a political thing. No, I don't want you to look that way. I want you to just look that's an example. Whether he gets it done, it remains to be seen, but I say you'll get it done. But this is not political propaganda here tonight. And Donald Trump don't even know about this. I haven't told him quite yet. But I want you to know that what Mr. John Durash was telling this man tonight, I've heard him many, 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 many nights. And gosh knows his counterpart, you couldn't find any better spokesperson to call in, where he is narrating to other people on the radios and then again back here on Mondays, and I guess he speaks Wednesday night too, Jerry Apriya. Is that correct, Mr. John?
Yeah, Jerry, Gerard's on a program. Let me see, but it's called Patriot Soapbox, and he does that on Wednesdays. That's usually in the morning, comes on at 11 o'clock and goes to, I think, let's see, 1 o'clock. It's a two-hour program. And we have other programs here with National Liberty Alliance also. One of them is a Bible study we have on Wednesday night at 7:30. It's an hour long. Terry, what other programs, or Jan, what other programs do we have going? I think we have a prayer meeting. Do we still have that going?
Eric? Prayer meeting still happens on, I think, Tuesday nights.
Okay. And
you're doing the Bible work. You're working through the Bible.
Right, we're doing Wednesday night on that. So, but anyway, we do have a lot of meetings, a lot of things going on.
All right. This is so important. And it's, you know, every day in the marketplace, whether it's in medicine, whether it's in, there's about 7 or 8 main niches in the market out here that we have to tend to deal with. And it is hard to keep up with what's the new inventions for a disease or in medicine. And it's, you have to be understanding to come on and have a defense by being on Monday night or Tuesday night or Wednesday. It used to be Thursday night. I even attended more of a small group with National Liberty Alliance. Well, let me sure tell you this. I am fully convinced that I knew that, and I spoke to Mr. John about this personally, that in my own parents' estate, I'm not bragging, this sounds like I'm bragging, please don't, people out here, look at it this way. My family were very well off, and yes, they came from England, and yes, we know what title of nobility, he spells it out and teaches us, Mr. John does, and if not so, Jerry Aprile, or anyone else that comes on it that knows what they know to be accurate. I want you to understand our family a long time ago, 450 years ago, had a landing that was found by the French, but was mine, which turns out now that the Stanlin didn't found, that the French found, and it's a certain landing in Brunswick County. I'm not going to call that tonight. It would sound like an advertisement, and I'm not, but I am telling you that my family also are being involved with 5 different towns, 2 of which, by the way, that landing was founded in 450 years ago. That's a true story, but I'll have to tell that another night. And then our family founded 5 different towns here, which 2 of which was founded even before my father came into play. And then my father wrote checks for, he was in a government situation and was having funds back in the time, and he stroked the checks to a couple other towns. And so I'm trying to explain to you now that there's 2 more towns, and I'm not going to call those names, that I have founded just recently. And when you understand it's on Stanlin property that came through our family by the King of England, and when we transferred over here to America. Well, that back in that time, that property was, you know, very minute and as far as cost. Today, it's a different ballgame. Let's move away from that. I'm trying to give you an understanding here now of where I'm coming from. I have now got the Precipice, a company that's more than 10 years old. I'm going to just use that. That once Mr. John and Mr. Jerry Aprile gets the information of this, I'm only going to give it to my friends, those 2 individuals right there. It would be a slander of disrespect for me to give this, what I am now privy of knowledge of, to any other organization on the planet. And it's going to be set to stone a leveling playing field that our angel investors are going to come in, and we're going to have the supply of John's prayers, his needs, to bring a lot of funds into National Liberty Alliance. That's the number one thing, because, folks, I heard one person tell me one time in Brunswick County, he said, "Dan, money talks and bullshit walks." That's funny. I hate to use that word, folks. I know ladies will be offended, but it was so funny, and I knew what he meant. And he was from Brunswick County, by the way, and I knew this young man very well. Well, nevertheless, back to a point that if you can understand, let's say that with a certain link, now it's going to have to be approved by John and Jerry, and I want Jan to know about this and anybody else associated. Let's say that, let's say, for example, maybe 100,000 or 10,000 people could come into play, and my company give a commission check or a referral fee or whatever you want to call it to, because these people came by the link that that Mr. John Durash and Jerry and his board put on his National Liberty Alliance website. And so when you start figuring this up, I can tell you right now that when you say, if your company got $50 as a referral fee, sometimes you would understand this a little better, but the math says if 10,000 people, you took what I've got, and that information would be an insurance policy with a big outfit of insurance and reassurance to help John in the courtrooms and to have the angel investors, no matter what the legal expenses cost, these people that don't even have a dime, they are going to be in the driver's seat, and they can be able to carry through the help of Mr. John and whatever he determines, their paperwork. I guarantee Mr. John Durash is an author and a doer, and he's done this many, many times, and we're not going to circumvent that either. And so there you go. What if we get $50 for 10,000 people coming on board? If we get $50 for 10,000 who has an insurance against the crime, that I'm going to put the there's 50 states, and there is I think 31 how many counties is it, John, that makes up America?
3,134, I think it is.
Well, that's exactly right. You heard it, folks. Can you imagine? I have something strong enough to shut down the criminal enterprise, but it's only going to go through the and be honored. And I'm going to pass the baton over with the information to Mr. John Durash and Jerry Apria. And, yes, that will include information that I have been putting together with a company. One company has worked with helping people at the tomb. Now the going thing is, and they're up into over $10 billion that they send to a helping organization, and that could be none other than National Liberty Alliance. And I can tell you that they will write the check, and that whatever fees, which will be nominal, this is the angel investor outfit, and I have several of these, not just one, but I have one that has already invested up over $10 billion in funds to help the assistant and assist the individual that's been done wrong about their properties, not only their homestead, that many, many nights I've been on here and hear these people and they're crying and they're hurting. It bothers me right now, tears in my eyes for some of these people where these criminal lawyers and stuff railroad these people in some fraudulent paper, and they acquire a property or think they acquired property, and they done it by under false pretenses. Those attorneys are going to be charged with doing exactly that, using the court system. There is a federal statutes. If you wanted to understand, and I know we don't go too much with statutes, but I can tell you the federal government, in a court of record, there is those situations that's backed up by the Supreme Court, very few of these laws and so forth that has been used are not that, and if it's not that, John Durash tell you that is hogwash, because that paper statutes or codes or none of that stuff will have no merit or will not apply to the people that comes on night after night and to hear, especially on Monday night, the good news that John has been telling us about how we can take back and bring good, solid people in there on each county, which he said, I believe, 3,100 and so many counties. Well, you rest assured, I will probably tell you it won't be very much longer. You're going to see this thing's going to hit national news. I'm going to start in the county of Brunswick, like Brunswick pool tables. I'm going to start right there. And when I unload on those people with our team, it's for everyone. It's not for Dan Stanlin. I've got plenty of funds in my family's, you know, from an inheritance standpoint. I'm not, you know, hurting with that, and I tell you right now, that still don't mean I made a pledge a long time ago to Mr. John and Jerry that there would be a lot of funds at the point of me selling my parents, which I'm the trustee and the executive over my parents' estates, and my grandfather's estates. That's three estates right there that I'm trustee, and more particularly, I'm the executor of my mother in her will to carry out, involved with her will. I'll just make you about a 10-second here where you'll see about 600,000-word essay. My brother, God rest his soul, stole while I was young and was having to help my parents from his thievery. And my brother, my mother and father were both multi-millionaires, and my brother stole my mother down while she was in a nursing home down to absolutely $100. So help me God, he stole all kind of funds, millions and millions of dollars. Now I already been working on and recovered 17 and a half. That won't even begin to touch it. And that's right here close in New Hanover County, which is close to Brunswick County, and where my brother filed a bankruptcy. And I'm going to close right here sort of with this. My brother filed on July the 21st of 2020. This is why Mr. John DeRash has not seen me. But I can tell you I've been hard at it. And he filed a bankruptcy wage earner plan. And I can tell you that in that scenario, that wage earner plan and the court is very close to a big hospital here in Wilmington, North Carolina, 17th Street. And there's more situations that I've got coming, but part of that recovery is where my brother sold without title 17 tracts of land, which would be over, and lots and so forth, $2 million and something. And so I've already covered that particular area, but there's still that one, even, but that's minute compared when I get down to the island where I do live on and start recovering there of where he stole titles. And he is lived only 29 days. He died in Wilmington Hospital, New Hanover Memorial Hospital at the time. Only lived 29 days, so I never was able to see face-to-face with him, and I had to battle, and I'm bringing this to a close right now, I had to battle more crooks in a federal court, Mr. John, trying to steal those 17 parcels of property, and I was fortunate enough to bring in a federal investigator, and that's how my brother and his last wife, got indicted. Because, and two, they sold all the property under purported deed. Folks, you people out there better listen to purported deed, because if they do not have it, I'm closing right here because we got other people on this queue. When a purported deed occurs, then it automatically will tell you need to call Mr. John DeRash and Jerry Aprile. Get on here right now every Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, whenever you can hear and learn something. Get the books of where you know what a real sheriff's supposed to be. Get the other books there about the economy and everything else that John DeRash, there's none, not any of it, that is under a situation where it's not worthy of your time. It is all worthy. And you to get further educated. And so I want you to understand that these judges are using that court to once again to obtain property under false pretenses, and I can tell you that this has happened twice with me, and just recently the same person that handled was a felon, cost me $29,000 with a law firm, I'm not going to call their name, over here in Wilmington in New Hanover County, and I thought everything was squared up when the Secretary of State called me, which is Miss Elaine Marshall. And I can tell you right now, she said, Dan, back in time, she says, I would have squashed this myself had I not had your information, because she said, I knew it was fraud. And someone had stole my title, and it was Daniel Adam Rooks and his family, and so it cost me $29,000. Would you believe that after 11 years back in time, not this month, but next month, July the 31st, about ready to close here, because I feel, a calling because other people's got to speak. there as what they were desired. Would you believe 11 years ago, 2 months from right now, July the 31st, a high-ranking traveling judge came in, heard my case, and returned the title to me. Would you believe that there's two judges this time in Brunswick County, I don't mind telling you that, that's going to go down, and the same felon, Daniel Adam Rooks, I am going to repeat his name, a felon, these two judges have gone and sided with him and stole my property the second time. Well, anybody, and I'm going to close right here, anybody will get on this call with the eminent Mr. John DeRash, Jerry Aprea, and I heard a man tonight say double jeopardy, or he mentioned about the violation of the Fifth Amendment. Yes, that is double jeopardy clause. And what you do is you sue in there for someone, I don't care what's a municipality, who it is, the president of the United States, I don't care who it is. If they violate the taking clause, you have right of due process of law, and you better have damages of exactly that you were denied due process of law. And when you go to federal court, I guarantee you're going to prevail, because that's what it takes to get in federal court, and that's a court of record. Mr. John, I'll have to get with you privately. I have to respect right now. You could ask me a few questions if you like, but I cannot disclose this like some kind of commercial or something here without you having firsthand, but I am telling you, we have got some good news to assist you now, and the revenue is going to start coming your way too as to this. And so I have to spell all this out, how that happens. And so I need to respect other people, and if you want to hold your questions later for me, I think that would be nothing but honoring these people here that's on this queue. I'm looking at right now, it's 5:11 Eastern Standard Time, and I'm
getting to the end of our program. So, all right. Well, I appreciate all that, Dan, and you got my number. You give me a call when you get a chance, but try not to make it till maybe the end of the week, because I'm just so tied up with lots of things this week, and we'll discuss things. We appreciate
it. Absolutely. Let's go on to the next queue.
Yeah, I would like
thank
to make
you, Mr. John.
All right, thank you. I'd like to just make a couple of points here. You know, you had mentioned partnership. You know, Gerard and I, we're not in partnership. We're co-founders of National Liberty Alliance. National Liberty Alliance is a trust. We do have, national leadership. And, of course, most of the major decisions are made by myself and Gerard. But we are trying to figure a way out so that we can put together, a plan that will really protect us from being taken over. As long as I'm alive, nobody's going to take over National Liberty Alliance. Believe me, I've tried on two occasions, but it didn't happen, won't happen, and it can't happen. But, I'm not going to live forever, and we do have to make arrangements for the future, and we're working on some kind of a plan to make sure that we don't get taken over by the evil, so to speak. But a lot of things are going to be gone. So as far as the New World Order is concerned, and all these insane people that are just money hungry and destructive people and care about nothing but themselves. But anyway, so we are just co-founders, and we are a common law trust. That's what we are here at National Liberty Alliance.
Thank you.
With that, I'm going to move on, Dan. Give me a call when you get a chance, but again, wait till the end of the week or something, because this whole week is really, at least until Friday, I'm really tied up.
Okay? I concur how busy I know you are, and you're probably busy, so busy on Friday that we might need to give you a rest.
Yeah, I'm going to.
I guarantee you're going to be appreciative.
I want to try to get a couple of more calls in before
we. Please, please.
So, okay, we'll take our next caller. Thanks, Dan. Yeah, okay, try to make this kind of quick if we can, and we can always pick up things next Monday. But we've got Roger here, it looks like. What state you're from? Is this Roger?
It's Deborah.
You've got four people, John. Deborah. Maybe we should pick them up next week.
Deborah. That's my husband's phone number.
Oh, okay.
It's our landline phone. So
Jen,
my question.
Jen?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Yeah, I was just noting that it's 11 o'clock now, and there right. are four people in the queue, and we can't get to all of them. And we
yeah, should... we're not going to be able to, yeah. All right, we're going to take just a couple of minutes, though. We've got 2 minutes left, so we'll take 3 or 4 minutes. But go ahead. What would you say your name was again?
Deborah.
Okay, and you're what state?
Missouri.
Okay, go right ahead, Deborah.
Okay, so my question is just with loans in general. Question is, the banks or the loan company, they just charge loans 4 times a year, right, with their 1099-C?
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about when you say, you know.
Well, like if it's a car loan, that type of thing.
Okay. Yeah,
Companies discharge their debt, I would say, 4 times a year, so the debt of the customers 4 times a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, but, yeah, I've heard of discharging from time to time, and I'm not sure exactly how all that works, so I don't have really much or any knowledge of it. I do know with mortgages, though, the mortgages, the key thing with banks and mortgages, you see, banks get a point or half a point or 2 points or whatever it is that they get for setting the loan up and putting things together. And that's it. They're not part of the arrangement in any kind of a contract. And actually, there is no contract that exists. The mortgage comes out of the Fed window, and the Fed window is that the mortgage comes out of ultimately is attached to the SESQ account. You know, they made it sound real good, you know, what is it, 60, 70, 80, how many years ago it was, I don't even know. Let me think. I'm not sure how long ago it goes when they set SESQ up. But in any event, it had to be after 1871, because that's when they incorporated the United States of America, and we entered into corporatism. And corporatism is actually Nazism. But in any event, with the mortgages, I do know there's no skin in the game from the banks. The banks, so when they sent you that booklet to be paid, you know, really, you don't have to pay it, although they'll come out after you if you don't pay it, and they're going to try to take you home if they don't pay it, and so on and so forth. They'll do a non-judicial foreclosure. They have to do a non-judicial foreclosure because they can't prove in court that they have any skin in the game and that there is any contract that exists. But they do collect the money. People pay the money, and a lot of it goes back into the Fed window, and there's a game going on, and they're filling their pockets up. And, of course, by the time you pay for your home, you paid it 3-4 times over, because when you put the interest, you know, that's compounded and so on and so forth, it turns out to be quite a bit of money. But anyway, that's how that works. But I don't know how the other part works that you were talking about with car loans and that kind of thing.
Okay, because I was watching Tamika Thorpe's videos, and she said that loan companies will discharge their customers' debt 4 times a year. And it's a loan over $600. And then, and of course, she talks about how the companies, will sell that loan on the stock market, that type of thing. So I was wondering.
That's when the loan fails, okay? That's when the collection of the loan fails. When they sell off a loan, they package together and they sell it off to some group of lawyers or group of doctors or whatever, and then they start trying to collect the money and go through all this stuff. Well, you see, you don't have no contract with those people. They can't prove a contract. There is no contract. So, they can't just change the people that's in the deal between those who set the loan up and the person who received the loan, and then all of a sudden push it off to someone else without your approval and knowledge. So, again, it just becomes another legal problem for them, at least under common law, you know. So that's the problem. Just they've made stealing legal. They do it in so many different ways. We laid out the process of the fraud with mortgage companies and with the tax foreclosures, you know, exactly how they did the fraud. And with the car loans or other loans and credit cards, when they sell them off and package it and all that other stuff, again, it's the same thing. It's all fraud, and they can't win in court if they actually went into court. But, you know, courts will rule on their behalf over and over and over again with no proof on paper that anything really exists.
Yeah.
And that's the problem we have. That's what we're up against. We need courts of justice back, and that's what we're working on.
Right. So I was asking if we wanted to find out if our car loan was basically sold off as a stock, or that it was discharged. If we wanted to look into that, would we contact like the accounting department, or how would you find that out with the company?
Yeah, to be honest, I really don't know. You'd want to go back to where it originates for and trace the paperwork from there.
Okay.
And a lot of times, a lot of the paperwork and a lot of things just disappear and gets lost because they're very sloppy to begin with. And then it's repackaged again sometimes and then packaged again. And it's moved around. It's resold. I mean, all this stuff goes on constantly. And nobody knows anything where anything's at. But nevertheless, you have no agreement with those people. Who are you? Go away. I don't know you. I have no agreement with you. You don't have a contract with me. Do you think you got a contract? Prove it. They can't prove it. And that's how you really win in those things. But again, it's not necessarily say you're going to win because, again, you have to understand the system. You've got to put the stress on. You know, the individual that was talking a little earlier and putting that judge under, you know, some stress because he brought up things that the judge didn't expect to come up, and he's realizing, oh, this guy's putting me in a position here, and I could become liable of something. I'm sure that's what's going through that judge's mind. Well, if you could do that in a court with a judge, that's when you potentially can get something done right. But it's hard, and you got to really be quick on your feet. The big problem, I know with me, is anyway, because I'm known there when we go into the courts, with a lot of the things we're doing here, you know, the big problem ultimately is they make these plans to really, you know, these different strategies, and they apply different strategies, but they also, you know, they set what's called a fixer. I notice that I keep getting the same judges in different things, but the same judges, IRS cases, same judges. Different cases for other people that we're working with, same judge. They all of a sudden, you know, because they have a wheel. I guess it's called a wheel. At least that's what I heard it's called, a wheel. You know, and the wheel sort of spins, however they work that. But anyway, electronically, I'm sure. But the thing is the judge is picked up by a wheel. In other words, it's by chance, by straw, or whatever you want to call it. And every time I open up a case and I go in to get involved with the case, within 2 or 3 days of the case being opened and the judge is applied to the case, within 2 or 3 days, judges change. All of a sudden get another judge. And we find it's the same person or two over and over again. So these particular judges, they're willing to throw themselves under the bus and even go to jail, I guess. I guess they're paid well enough, or maybe they got enough on them. I don't know, whatever the case, whatever's going on there. But they'll do anything. What I've seen judges do and decisions made, and it, you know, it's just, I can't believe they even have the guts to even put something on paper the way they do in opposition to what we have. And, you know, it's just so clearly a crime and so clearly, you know, fraud. So, but anyway.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We're over our time. I apologize. We have 3 other people in the queue. Maybe you can get into the queue earlier next week and we can pick up on you then. But until then, we got to close down. So good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. See you next Monday. Good night.
Good night.